Good afternoon. Best wishes that everyone enjoyed your extended 7-minute schmooze. All right. I'm a fairly introverted person. I don't spend a lot of time schmoozing. So, you should be especially thankful that introverts extend the schmooze time. All right. Or maybe it's just because I take extra time that I'm not prepared to do the things I need to do. Today, I have a few prepared words that I would like to say just as an elder at this congregation. I have a few quick things to say about Shavuot, and then I want to spend just a little bit of time having a discussion with everyone, at least with everyone who is willing to participate and has something that he wants to say, and then we'll be done. Then we'll finish up and enjoy some time together at the Oneg and carry on. Fair enough. So fairly quick little discussion here. First of all, right, as an elder at Remnant of Israel Messianic Synagogue, right, I am someone who very much appreciates my freedom, right, and let me explain to you what I mean by this so that you understand the context in which I'm discussing it, right. There are, you know, in the Torah, the thing that is prohibited on Shabbat is malacha, right. Now, what exactly does malacha mean, right? There are all sorts of disagreements in rabbinical writings as to what constitutes malacha, right? I feel, right, I think that as someone who can read Torah, as someone who can make my decisions on that matter, I think that I am free to, with whatever guidance the Spirit, blessed be He, chooses to give me, that I can make those decisions, right? And that framework is generally the framework that your board of elders here uses in halakhic decisions, right? We are not, for the most part, going to tell you, you know, there are 39 things or 40 things less one, right? So 39 things that you cannot do on Shabbat, right? We view our role as fairly constrained, right? We're not trying to boss you around. We don't want to, right? We want to lead you as much by example as we're capable, and we want to lead you by coming alongside of you. We do not want to give you orders, right? We do not want to, or we certainly do not want to trespass the boundaries of our authority, even though those boundaries are not very clearly delineated, right? So I want to be a leader in a synagogue full of free men and women who are freely making decisions, not people who view themselves as constrained by the society that we have here, you know, that, you know, oh, I roll my eyes and then I do whatever stupid Joe and stupid Philip and stupid Zach tell me to, right? That's not what we want here. That's the opposite of what we want. So please take my comments in that spirit, right? There are some ballot initiatives upcoming in the state of Kansas, right? I am not telling you how to vote. I am not telling you to vote, right? What I am telling you, right, is that this synagogue, we teach and we believe, right? And if you are in communion with us, it is expected that you believe that all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to Jesus of Nazareth, Yeshua ben Yosef min Nazareth. All authority. Right. Right. So if you don't believe that, right, if you disagree with that, right, and now keep in mind, what does that mean? Right? That means that I believe that he has authority over my life. That doesn't necessarily mean that Philip and Zach have that same authority over my life, right? I believe that he has that authority over Charles' life, right? I do not have that authority, right? Charles is responsible to Jesus Christ, right, for most of his decisions, right? There are very, very few decisions to which he is responsible to the leadership of the synagogue, all right? But as a, if you are a member of this synagogue, if you come here, you know, we have a membership class. We don't have a very official canonized list of things that we believe. One thing that we most certainly do believe is that all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to Yeshua, right? And because of that, there is no authority that can be exercised legitimately in violation of his will, right? If Joe George says Joe George has authority over my own life, I do have some authority over my life, right? That authority has been delegated to me by the Son of God, by the second person of the Trinity, right? And if I make choices with that authority that are in violation of that perfect will, then that's on me. Right, that's a sin. Okay, that's me putting my will over his and exercising the authority that he has given, that he has delegated to me, because all authority is his, right? He's delegated that authority to me, and I am making a bad choice with that, right? I, in addition to being an elder at the synagogue, I'm also an officer in the United States Army, right? I have certain authority that's been delegated to me, right? There's a constitutional process, right? Government power, the application of state power, right, has been constituted in the United States in a document, right? And some of that authority in specific cases, right, has been delegated to me in my military job, right? If I choose to abuse that authority, if I choose to use that authority in a manner that is inconsistent with the order, the written orders of my superiors, right? Or if I choose to do something that is a violation of the written law of the Constitution, I'm abusing that authority. That is unjust use of that authority, and I can be held liable before the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Right? In the same way, everyone here, right, all of you, right, who have, you know, I don't know anything about the respective state of grace of every human being here, right? I believe that every one of you, all right, you're in a building that, right, we believe that that man who lived 2,000 years ago was God, right? So you have some pretty crazy ideas, right? If that's actually true, that was a miracle. Right, he later made that claim that I've just referenced, that he owns all the authority in the universe, and everything, all authority that exists is his. Right, therefore, if you're exercising any kind of authority, right, you are exercising it only as his proxy, in the same way that my military authority is exercised by proxy of the United States Constitution, right? And I'm liable to that Constitution and its subordinate laws for my exercise thereof, right? So, because you're here, I assume that you believe all this stuff, right? I'm therefore telling you, as either official members of this synagogue or as people who come here, and maybe you're not an official member yet, maybe you never will be, that's okay, but you generally agree with the things that we say, right? I am telling you that the expectation of every person who exercises any kind of authority, including the authority that you, as a free-born citizen of the United States, exercise when you go into a voting booth, that authority needs to be exercised in concert with the will of God. If it is not exercised in that way, it is unjust and illegitimate. In the same way, if I mean, what's a good example? I'm an officer in the armies of the United States, right? Say that, God forbid, I choose to go use military authority, the power of the state, to kidnap someone and enslave him. This is a violation of the 13th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. I am abusing my authority, right? Just because I have that authority does not mean I get to use it in that way. And what I am doing in front of that same law that delegated the authority to me, right, I can be held liable because I'm doing the wrong thing. Okay? So again, I'm not telling you how to vote. I don't think that is within the scope of the authority given to Remnant of Israel Messianic Synagogue. I am not telling you that you must vote. Right? I'm telling you, right, I assume that everyone here is a freeborn citizen of the Republic. You have the right to vote if you're of age. Right? I wouldn't be saying this to the church in China. Right? I mean, they get thrown in forced labor camps for attempting to participate in their government. Right? You are expected to one degree or another to participate in yours, or you at least have the option available. I'm not telling you that you have to do that. I don't think I have that authority. This is the authority that I do have. This is the authority that, as an elder, that the church legitimately has, is that your mind needs to be conformed to the mind of Christ, right? And when you are making these decisions, you must remember that the authority that you as a citizen are executing is held by proxy. That authority is given to you. It is given to you by the one, blessed be he, who owns all authority. It's been delegated. I am also politely reminding you that there will come a day when you will be called to account for your use of that authority. So make your judgments appropriately. All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to the Son of Man. Right? When you participate in your government to whatever degree you choose to do, remember that and consider it. Right? And that's not just true for government, right? When you say, you know, whatever, well, I don't think that working out is a violation of Shabbat. I'm not telling you that you can't go to the gym on Shabbat. I don't. My wife does, right? These are, you know, I am an officer. I have a professional responsibility to maintain a level of physical fitness, and so I don't exercise that responsibility on Shabbat. It's a work responsibility. My wife is no longer in the Army, right? So she says, oh, I like to work out. She's weird that way, right? So for her, that's recreation. Okay, fine. Go work out on Shabbat, right? You have that freedom. When you are exercising that freedom, remember that the authority to exercise that freedom comes directly from the Son of God. It is not transmitted to you through bishops or elders or anything like that. It is given to each one of you as free human beings, right? He that the Son sets free, he is free indeed. Okay? So every one of you, right, who has been set free by the Son of God, by that sacrifice, every one of you is a free person making free moral decisions. You need to be guided by the fact that the authority that you have comes from someone else, comes from someone who earned that authority by dying and by being raised by the power of the Almighty, right? As a victory present, he was given all of the authority. That's his. You are abusing that authority if you make the wrong choice. You are giving him glory if you make the right choice. As a free moral actor, if you are choosing to do the things that please him, you are giving him glory. You are doing the right thing. You are putting an offering on the altar, right? That's true religion, right? What you're doing makes God happy, right? That those are the things. When you exercise his authority in the way that it should be exercised, whether it's, you know, they brought me baked beans with bacon in them again, and you say, no, that's not a clean animal, I'm not going to eat it, right? You are giving him glory, right? When you step into the voting booth and say, this option brings glory to the Son of God, and this option is in violation of his will, therefore I vote for option A, you are giving him glory, right? When you say, you know, whatever, I'm going to have recreation on Shabbat but not work, you are giving him glory, right? And those are the things for which he will in return give you glory before his Father when he says the words, well done, good and faithful servant, right? You are only good and faithful if you have been making these decisions, at least trying to make these decisions in accordance with his will, right? All of you are free moral actors. You have that choice, right? You can choose not to do it. So, right, I don't tell you how to vote. Right? If you want to know the right answer, you're welcome to come ask. Then I can tell you, right? But that's not my job. I don't have that authority. Right? I do have the authority to remind you from whom your authority comes. All right? So that's the authority that I'm exercising here. Remember, first of all, who bought you, right? You have, you know, your freedom came at a price, right? So your exercise of that freedom, it seems only fair that your exercise of that freedom, that you should, as someone who can make moral choices, you should try to make your moral choices in accordance with his will. Right? As an individual, I can tell you that I don't always do that. I violate his will. I'm a sinner. Right? And I'm sure that doesn't surprise anyone. No one's surprised that Joe George is a sinner in desperate need of the grace of God. Right? What I'm telling you is that in all things, including your voting choices, we should remember that we are exercising only the authority that is given to us by the proxy of the Son of God. Okay? Thank you for your time in this matter. Now, Shavuot, right? I want to speak very, very briefly about Shavuot. It's right, again, if you're from the Western church tradition, many of us are, that's fine. You've heard it called Pentecost, just coming over into the different languages from Hebrew. Shavuot is, of course, the Hebrew name. So today is the last day of counting the Omer, right? And then tomorrow is actually Shavuot. Right, because we are such a geographically dispersed synagogue, we're not planning on coming together to celebrate Shavuot tomorrow. However, tomorrow is a special Shabbat, right? It should be treated as such. You know, so earlier we talked about Malacca, right? You are intelligent people. You can make your own decisions on what constitutes Malacca and what does not. There are certain things that very obviously constitute Malacca. Right, and there are other things that, you know, for example, I mentioned the Bakers, right? Seth Baker's cop. If he draws a shift on Shavuot, that's work that needs to be done. That's obviously not a violation of Shabbat, right? If you decide, hey, I'm going to go pick up a few hours of overtime tomorrow, let's not do that, okay? Right, if you have a free choice not to, then. Right, work for payment is clearly Malacca. All right, so tomorrow's a special Sabbath. What else? Shavuot is, right, we had right? In Torah study today, we had so Genesis 38, right? Genesis 38 is the passage that makes us all break into that flop sweat, right? Because we're talking about Onan and his predilections, and oh boy, that's uncomfortable, right? And then we get talking about, because it's related to, the concept is related to the Levirate marriage, right? The Levirate marriage is, you know, if a man who's married a woman dies without an heir, that man's brother has to, you know, that scriptures translates that, do the duty of a brother-in-law and, you know, give that woman children, right? So this is uncomfortable. If you have, if you've ever dealt with any sort of apologetics, people say, aha, see, this is something that you don't do. Nah, it's not something that we don't do, right? That woman has a moral expectation of being cared for by this man's family. She became part of that man's family, right? Now, you know, if I was in this situation, I don't have a brother, I only have one sister, but if I was in this situation, I don't think I would be required to have sex with my sister-in-law should my brother-in-law die, but I would be required to care for her as a member of my family, right? So this passage of Torah, like all other passages of Torah, is still applicable to us, right? So that's something we talked about during Torah study today, right? Shavuot, like all other passages of Torah, is still applicable to us, right? Now, historically, we can see how this happened, right? I want to talk briefly about two historical parallels that, historical parallels might not be the best word, pardon me, two historical similarities in some of the recordings we have, both the scriptural recordings and some of the traditional records, traditional outside of the context of scripture, but that seem to be legitimate enough that we can at least talk about them as history, right? I just want to talk briefly about that and show how it impacts our lives, right? First of all, right, the first Shavuot, right, so the children of Israel are set free physically, politically from the bondage in Egypt, right? Remember that in addition to that, the book of Ezekiel also tells us that the worst bondage there was that they were bowing down to the gods of Egypt, right? So they were not just set free religiously and politically, they were set free spiritually, right, in Egypt, right? They leave Egypt, they go through the Sinai wilderness for a time, and then, right, according to the rabbis, right, we don't have this, the specific timeline is not recorded for us in the scriptures. However, the rabbis tell us that on Shavuot, the Torah was given, right? Right, the Torah was given, right? So God comes down in great thunderings and lightnings on the mountain, right? The people hear the voice of God. They're justly afraid of the voice of God. So they say to Moses, you know, we need to back up off of this a little bit, but you go up to get the Torah for us, right? That event occurred on Shavuot, right? It is consistent with some of the historical information we get Exodus, right, that could have happened on Shavuot, right? But it is, we don't get the specific, you know, they were 49 days in the wilderness and then on the 50th day that happened, right? But it, right, the rabbinical tradition is consistent with that. It could have happened. It probably did, right? Exodus doesn't record every last, you know, and then Moses took this step, right? So it is at least a good enough tradition that, right, if someone tells you that the Torah was given on Shavuot, it probably was, right? And that's, there's no reason to think otherwise also. So we're going to assume, just for the sake of argument, that the Torah was indeed given on Shavuot. Okay, so one historical parallel on Shavuot. Right, the Torah is given, right? Moses was up on the mountain, and then he gets told to go down, right? And what was going on at the foot of that mountain when Moses gave the Torah? What's that? What happened? Chaos? Yeah, there was chaos, right? And Aaron organized the chaos, didn't he, right? Aaron's okay, take off your rings, take off all that stuff, and I got the gold, and it went in the fire, and out came this calf, right? Now, interestingly enough, a rabbinical tradition is that the golden calf was animated by the power of Satan or something like that. So Aaron literally did, because if you read the account, that's what Aaron says. I got the gold, went in the fire, and out came this calf. Right? I bear no moral responsibility for that act. Right? So according to rabbinic tradition, I don't know how much authority we're going to give this tradition, but, you know, literally, Aaron put the gold in the fire, and, you know, by some sort of magical satanic power, this thing comes out that the children of Israel didn't worship, right? That at least sounds consistent with the nature of Satan wanting to be worshipped, right? But whatever. Anyways, there you go. So, right, Moses comes down, fight occurs. How many people died? How many? 3,000. That's right. 3,000 people died because of what happened there, right? Now, fast forward about roughly 1,450 years to the Shavuot, right, in which the Spirit descended as tongues of fire on the apostles and some of the other people who'd been with Jesus, right? And they were given the power to speak in various different languages, right? We've heard that story. Oh, these clowns are drunk, right? Crazy how drunk people speak perfectly good grammar languages that they've never spoken before, right? That's I need to drink more if that's true. How many people were saved at their preaching? 3,000. Coincidence? I'll let you decide. Right? So, Shavuot, right? There can be no argument, right? There can be no argument that, well, you know, our master has ascended on high and he's reigning now, so that's done away with, right? No, don't listen to that nonsense, right? Because we can see, right? We can see historically this parallel, right? The law is given, right? 3,000 people die because of their sin, right? Over here, right, the Spirit falls in power. That doesn't mean the Spirit never dwelt with humans before that, right? But it means that there was a special giving of the Spirit at that point in time, right? And 3,000 people are saved, right? 3,000 people are saved through the work of the Spirit, right? That's one parallel that I'd like you to note for Shavuot. And, right, again, here, you know, there's no reason that the Spirit can't fall in power tomorrow, right, on Shavuot. So my encouragement to you would be to, you know, we're not going to have an organized communal gathering here at the synagogue, but I would encourage you to be with your families. I would encourage you to be with other believers, right? And, you know, if God wills it, maybe the Spirit will fall again in great power, right? And maybe the Spirit will only fall in the power that you need at that specific time, right? His will is perfect, right? And His plans are perfect. But, right, this day, as with all other of the Mardim, the appointed times, right, that is something we should care about today, because that's something God cares about, right? God is sanctified in time, and these times of His are the way that He communicates, one of the ways that He communicates with us, right? So my encouragement to you is to be with other believers and be expecting something tomorrow. I don't know what it's going to be, but right, we have the right to expect it. We have the intellectual justification to expect it because it's real and it's for our time. Right? Another point that I would like to make. Again, I'm going to go back to a rabbinical tradition. Please be careful with the rabbinic traditions, right? You know, again, I've talked about moral freedom, the moral freedom to choose, right? There are all sorts of bad rabbinic traditions. They are bad, right? And if, you know, one of the ways in which I will exercise my power as an elder in this synagogue is to extend the right hand of fellowship to you and gently correct you if you're messing around with rabbinics too much, all right? Because I've had enough experience with that to know that that can destroy a synagogue, all right? And if you have any questions, please ask, all right? I'll leave it at that for right now. So with that caveat stated, right, the rabbinic tradition I'm going to share with you is that when the people of Israel come out of Egypt, they wander around. According to the rabbis, they're wandering around for 49 days, and on the 50th day, they are given Torah. Right? Who was there at the base of that mountain? What's that? The assembly of Israel, and that include, that's correct. Thank you, sir. And that included whom? What? Yes, it included a mixed multitude, right? Now, yes, Israel was there. Included with Israel is the mixed multitude. Absolutely correct. Here's the rabbinic tradition. The story goes that when, you know, when God comes down on the mountain and the thunderings and lightnings are occurring and God starts giving the Torah, right, that this Torah was heard in various different languages, right? It was heard in all the languages of the mixed multitude, right? Now, this rabbinic tradition is not as popular in modern-day Judaism because modern-day Judaism is very, what's the term I'm looking for, ethnocentric, right? They don't like the fact that there was a mixed multitude down there, right? As a matter of fact, there's another rabbinic tradition that says the 3,000 people that died there was all a mixed multitude, and then there was no more mixed multitude, right? Whatever, right? Anyways, right, that every person at the base of that mountain heard these thunderings and lightnings in their own language, right? Now, what happens at Shavuot, 1450 years later? The Spirit fell in power, right? There were tongues of fire above the heads of the believers, right? And what? Why did people think they were drunk? Because they were speaking tongues of all the people that were there in Jerusalem, right? Why were all those different people there? This is one of the three days that, you know, that the observant men should come together in the nation. And so there were people from all over. I know it specifically mentions Parthians. I believe it mentions Scythians, right? That's modern-day Iran. That's modern-day Russia, Ukraine, that area. Right, I mean, there are people from a long ways away, right? Jews and Gentile believers, people who were God-fearers who wanted to hear that, and here they did on that day because of the power of the Spirit, right? So Shavuot is not only a day, right, that is still valid and relevant to all of us, right, but it is also a day when we should expect the Spirit to move in power to help us reach out to those who need to hear. Okay? So again, like every other day, right, like every other mawad, every other appointed day where God has an appointment to meet with his people, right, he's always faithful to keep his appointments, right? My encouragement to you is to expect something to happen, right? Maybe the Spirit will fall in power. I don't know what he'll do. Right, who has known the mind of the Lord and who has been his counselor? Not this guy, right? But that God has something planned for us. I know that. What it is, I don't know. Ask him, don't ask me, all right? But a special day, a day that we should all observe properly, that's my encouragement to you. So thank you. Finally, one more thing that I want to talk about briefly. You know, so your board of elders, the good idea fairy, is always hard at work. Sometimes too hard at work. I want just a little bit of feedback. I am going to be modifying at least my style, if I'm the person giving the sermon. I haven't been giving a lot of sermons lately, but as I continue in that role, that the elders have and that we're going to be trying to expand to some other of the men in the congregation. I want some of your feedback just, first of all, on my teaching style. And first of all, let me tell you how I'm going to modify some of the things I'm going to do, right? One of my previous jobs, I've been a teacher, right? And I know that when I'm teaching and I'm the only one talking, that's a problem, right? So I'm going to, in the future, when I am preaching, when I'm running the sermon, I will be talking, I'll be trying to engage people a lot more, okay? I think that's, right, because, you know, today, I think Johnny asked me, hey, are you going to be teaching, right? That's the terminology that we use in this synagogue to talk about this guy that comes up here and does this thing, right, teaching. But it's not really teaching if ain't nobody learned anything, right? And I don't think people are going to learn anything, or I don't think you're going to learn as much if we're not interacting, right? There are some things that the Bible tells us to do, right? There are certain things, right? We should be reading the scriptures publicly, right? And that's not just, you know, you'll hear some people say, well, that's because back in the day when Paul was reading scriptures publicly, he was probably, you know, he was probably one of maybe 20% of the population that could read, right? He was maybe one of 5% of the population that could read from the Torah scroll, right? Okay, fine, got it. And everyone here is literate. Nonetheless, we should be reading the scriptures to give glory to the one who wrote the scriptures, right? So yes, we need to be reading the scriptures publicly. You know, it's very clear that we should be praising. We should, this divine being that created the heavens and the earth, he's worthy of praise, right? So there are certain things that we should do, right? But, you know, if you have any input on other things that perhaps we should do, I'd like to hear about that. So, if anyone wants to speak, I have a microphone here, and speak, and we can have a brief discussion on anything that you like or don't like. You know, of course, be respectful, be appropriate, but if you have any comments, we're ready to talk about them for a few minutes, and this will be the last thing we do. So then, well, not the last thing we do, but this will be the last thing we do as part of our sermon time today. So the floor is open. I'll bring you over a microphone if there's anything you want to say. But don't everyone speak at once. So I do want your feedback. I want your feedback on, let's see. You know, is what we're doing here right for you, right? Also, is what we're doing here the right way to reach out to other people? You know, I mean, I don't care about growing the synagogue so that more people can come listen to Joe George give a sermon, right? That's not the idea. But we as believers, right? I think earlier we were talking about all authority in heaven and on earth, something like that, right? And then what did he say? What was his first commandment on after assuming that authority, what did he tell us to do? Go, therefore, and make disciples, right? So are we doing that well? Could we be doing it better? The floor is open. But it won't be open much longer because I think we're going to do a cheesecake own egg. So if anyone wants to speak, speak now. And if not, you had your chance to. Hold on, Derek, I'm going to give you the microphone. If that's what you want to say, say it loudly enough for everyone to hear.
I just wanted to say that Jesus loves all you guys, and I hope that you're blessed.
Well, Jesus does love all of you guys, and you have been blessed by his sacrifice, but thank you for sharing that with us, Derek. Anyone else? Anything at all?
Well, I'll just introduce myself. My name is Christian. This is my actually first time being here. I'm friends with Paul and Jordan from Tucson. I'm visiting them. But I just wanted to give you some feedback because I really appreciate your philosophy that you kind of described about not being here as an elder or any authority figure to tell people what they're to do or try to have this constraints that you're putting on this life, but that you're just here to what I got, basically to provide them as many tools or resources as they can from what you know, from what you understand about God, who he is, about the Torah and these things, to help them make the very best decisions they can in their life. And I think that that's the really freeing part about following God and doing these things. It's not about him putting these tight restraints on our life. It's about him giving the freedom to choose and saying, I love you. Here are the tools you can have through Torah, through these things, to make the best decisions for your life, and that will bless your life and that will bless the lives of other people. And so I just think that that's totally in line with the character and nature of God and who he is, that it's about giving us the freedom but also providing us with the resources to say, hey, exercise your freedom, but think about it and be intentional.
Thank you for saying that, Christian. Where do you attend the Messianic Synagogue in Tucson?
I'm part of like a home fellowship.
Uh-huh, okay.
But it's Torah observant.
Right. When I was based at Fort Huachuca, the closest synagogue was in Tucson. So if you go there, maybe you'll meet some of my old friends.
Oh.
Cool, huh? Thank you for saying that, Christian. I appreciate that. Anyone else? Doreen?
I would just like to know, has there been any thought to extending the bar and bat mitzvah classes open to the rest of the congregants? That could be very foundational, uplifting for some of us, and giving us some of that same foundation and teaching that the kids are getting before their bat mitzvah.
Yeah.
Or bar.
Yeah. So the question was our bar and bat mitzvah class, right? We've just completed. Or we're in the process of completing our inaugural, we call it a BB class, bar bat mitzvah, all right? So let me give you the perfect rabbinical answer, Doreen. Yes and no, right? Yes, we have thought about it, and we don't want to do it. Hear me out all the way, right? No Talmudic answer can be short, right? So, yes, we have thought about it. No, we don't want adults in the bar and bat mitzvah class because we're concerned that the kids will kind of defer to the adults and not participate as much. As a rabbit trail, you know, you especially, because of your educational background, you would be so proud of these kids. They have done an amazing job, and I'm surprised. I honestly thought that most of them were too young, right? And I, you know, my wife isn't here to hear me say this. The Lord works in mysterious ways. I was wrong, right? They have risen to the challenge, and they've done an amazing job. And I'm just shocked by that. And we have considered it, and we think that they won't participate as much because they see their elders there. Right, and so for that reason, we don't want to open the bar bat mitzvah class to adults. However, I'm glad that you asked that. This is what I've been thinking. I've only shared it very briefly with the elders, and one of the reasons that I wanted your feedback today is I want to change the way that we do our new member classes. I want to change the format I want it to be, instead of a new member class where, you know, only the people that are new members come and do new member stuff back there, like we've done before, There's nothing necessarily wrong with that, but I think a better way to do it would be to have basically a series of interactive sermons that we do as an entire congregation. I think that these interactive sermons would be over some of the same material that we cover, right? I mean, some of the material that we cover in the BB classes are, you know, arguments for the existence of God, right? What we call natural theology. Also, we give an introductory logic class. We give, you know, some of those things. And instead of calling it something like a new members class, right, because of my background, I think I'd call it something like basic training. And, you know, I think it would be good for the entire congregation to do, because the basics never go out of style, right? If you're, you know, an analogy would be if you're a soldier, right, the things that you learned in basic training, if you're a good soldier, you still do those things, right? You do them really well, but they're still basic. So I think I'm going to discuss that with the board, see what their thoughts are, get their feedback. But that's actually one of the reasons that I wanted to have this discussion. So that's the yes part. The no part is we've discussed and specifically decided not to have adults in the BB class. The yes part is that because of the basic nature, basic isn't the right word, because of the foundational nature of that material, it should be broadly held, understood, and probably agreed upon if you want to be in communion with the synagogue. So that's my thought, and that's something I'll share with the board. So did I answer your question? Do you have... I mean, we're having a discussion. Do you want more input into that?
I really appreciate the consideration of not interrupting the flow of the bat and bar mitzvah kids. Being an educator, I understand all too well how that would be an impediment to their advancement and their understanding of the kingdom. But I just also was sensed a need for those foundational things to be reoccurring with adults as well.
So. Right. And so, well, please, I mean, let's keep talking, right? So, I mean, first of all, something to know about me, sometimes I get married to my ideas and emotionally defensive of them. I don't want to do that in this case. So any input you have on how to do that would be welcome. I mean, we can either talk more here, or we can talk more offline. But or if you've spoken your piece and that's it, then I'm encouraged by what you said, because it sounds like we're at least thinking generally along the same lines. So as you like.
I don't think I have any more input about that.
Okay. Well, if you think of something more later, let me know. All right. Well, thank you, Doreen. Anyone else? Derek?
I just wanted to say how good, I forget his name, but how good of a leader you actually have. I've been in different churches, and sometimes it's rare to find someone who's like, as serious and gives you the truth and actually is military trained. And like, I just soak in what this guy shares, because it seems like it's going to help you in a lot of different areas of your faith and life. And so.
Thank you, Derek. In the Middle East, we would say Masha'Allah, which means with the will of God, because it's his will that I can do something. But those are kind words. Thank you, Derek.
I just wanted to say I've not been coming very long, but I noticed that the three of you elders all have a different style of teaching, and you go into different depths of teaching. And I think everyone learns differently. And so one person that might really affect me and my learning may not affect someone else, mm-hmm. yet one of the other elders, it may be just the opposite. So I personally like the variety, and being a bit of an introvert myself, probably won't answer much when you ask questions.
Well, fine. That's good to know. Thank you. I appreciate it. Anyone else?
Well, I have a story.
Mm-hmm.
This is the story when my mom and my brother and I tried to find Rin, our lost dog. We went to a place where there was, where you can't go, but we went to go in there, and we went to the forest. There was a lot of ticks and mosquitoes. And we lost the collar, and mommy's blood sugar was low. They asked me to run for the car, and it was far away, and I went to the forest. I got lost. I pray to God to not... I pray so I can find a way to get in the car. I worry that she's gonna die. So there was a thought I had, and then I went up to the stream and went up the mountains and found two houses. And it turns out I found one that belongs to the owner, and I explained everything to him, and we went to find them. And the door was unlocked, and I got the thing that will help her get her sugar up. Then we found Mommy and David, and she was all right. She just needs rest. And God brought my brother back from Brazil when my parents got divorced. Mommy, when we prayed, and Mommy was overjoyed, and she said, "Thank God." And he helped me find Fluffy again. I prayed to see him, my cat. I was overjoyed to see him again. And in this church, he reminds me of what he'd done for us in the past years. And I'm very thankful to have him and Jesus Christ of my family and my friends and what he done for me and my family.
Well, we're glad that we can be a part of your family. The Almighty, blessed be He, gave us a good world in which we can have families, right? Thank you for sharing that. Last chance.
So, my name's Charlie. Nobody knows me. But anyway, I just want to say I'm very appreciative of everybody that comes here. Something that really sticks to me, or that I find myself thinking about sometimes, is like as I'm traveling up here to come here on Shabbat or even Poor House, it's just amazing that I see all these people driving by, and a lot of people don't know really like what Shabbat is. If you say Shabbat Shalom to somebody, they're going to look at you crazy. But it's amazing how it's just a few people of us here. Like, there's only two congregations in Wichita. It's us and Lehi'im way up north. And, I mean, not saying that there's not other believers that don't come, but it's nice to know that there is a mishpah family here to be able to come to on a Friday, or, excuse me, a Saturday. And, you know, everybody else is kind of just wandering about. And here we are praising Yeshua, because that's who we believe in. We all believe in the same Father, Son, and Spirit. And I'm also appreciative of what you were saying earlier about how you're not right about things, because everybody in this building has sinned at one point in their life and probably still do. But that's why there's also endless mercy and grace. And we can be forgiven for those sins. And the only way you're forgiven through that is through the blood. in which Yeshua shed for us on the tree. So, but I just want to say thank you to everybody, and I'm very thankful for you and the way that you teach and the way that how you present things. And I like that also that you get us involved, because it gets our brains thinking and working. And I mean, you get people outside of their box, which is sometimes needed.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's working?
It's working.
All right. Well, good. Okay. So I'll do it more. We'll give that a try. Last chance. No? Seeing nothing? Okay. Well, thank you for that feedback. I sincerely appreciate it. If my fellow introverts didn't want to say anything publicly, but you want to come up and chat with me later, of course, you're always welcome to chat with any of the elders. And I would, like I was talking with Doreen, I mean, if anyone has any input on this idea that's been rattling around in my brain, that we should have kind of an everyone together bar and bat mitzvah class that replaces our new members class and kind of, you know, is basic stuff very similar to in content to what the bar and bat mitzvah kids are doing, right? I would welcome your input on that matter. I think that's it. Let's share a brief meal together, and then I think a lot of people are excited for an oneg to share a bit more extensive meal together. That's fine too. I think we've got the elements ready. If someone wants to come over and help me with this.